Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk some car maintenance and repair with our friend Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. You got a question about your car or truck? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Hope you're not driving today. If you are, you know, both hands on the wheel, 10 and 2, please. The driving is not great. 800-348-2551. Or voxpop@wamc.org, the one, the only, Gordon Fricke is here to answer your car questions right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. So if you have a question, it's a good bet he's got some kind of an answer. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And several people have done that already. But the number is 800-348-2551. Our screener is waiting for your call right now. She's very excited. No, she's not that excited about it. But call anyway. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke, how are you?
Hello, Ray. I'm good. How are you?
How many cars have you towed today?
You know, I was expecting maybe a lot of activity. However, the bigger hype and publicity these storms get, the more people that really listen, and it puts less traffic out there. So I had one call this morning, but it was too far away. Somebody needed a winch out, but it was like 20 miles away from me. And this was before the roads were mostly plowed. So I think people are taking it easy. And in our region here, we're kind of in a shadow effect. We don't have this massive amount of snow. We might have like 8-9 inches, something like that, but listening to the weather before the show, some areas are getting absolutely walloped.
Yeah, and it's heavy snow. It was a lot of fun shoveling at 4 o'clock this morning or, you know, clearing out the driveway. We used a snowblower on some of it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, snow-related. The drive-in at 6 a.m. was hellacious today, and I was in my wife's car. It's got ABS and yada, yada, yada. What exactly does ABS do, and why does it seem to not help me at all on snow?
Yeah, that's extremely good question, because early on, ABS was adopted by some European makers in the 80s, and the motoring public never was educated on how it worked, what to expect, what noises it makes, how it feels, and all that. So I worked at a Volkswagen, Porsche, Audi dealer in those years, and the first snow, we had phone calls like crazy. I got to get my car in right away. Something terribly went wrong with the braking system this morning, and it turned out to be the function of the ABS. Going to your question, it is there to prevent wheels from locking up on braking.
On dry
slippery
land.
Surfaces.
Oh, really?
Hard braking. A tire gets into the dirt where the others are on pavement. When you're on freshly fallen snow like you were this morning,
yeah,
it overreacts, and it feels like it's doing you less good. Is that what you felt?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So the early years, I remember Audis had a deactivate button. You could turn it off, because they found that if you had to come to a big stop in accumulated snow, the wedging effect of the tires made the car stop faster than modulating the brakes. You can't turn any of them off anymore. But that was something that they thought about way back when.
Well, I don't like them. Just I'm going on the record saying that I don't like them. We have several emails here, but I know you kind of wanted to just touch upon the fact that Tesla remarkably has lowered the prices on those vehicles.
Yeah, you know, sometimes we like to just start with something, you know, that the industry is not aware of, or something that's new and happening. And I watch a podcast in the morning, automotive related. It tells us about the trends, the new stuff, what's happening corporate level and electrification and all that. And Tesla has started reducing some pricing. And some of it was pressure in China, because they have competition in China. There's a lot of electric car companies in China. So Tesla is not the only experienced game in town. These guys are starting to sell a lot of vehicles that are selling for considerably less money. So part of the strategy was get the prices closer in that market. However, and I know that Elon Musk has become a little bit controversial and maybe not quite as popular among some groups as he once was, but he is starting to change the way vehicles are built on the assembly line. And the legacy automakers have been building cars kind of the same way on assembly lines, maybe since Henry Ford got the assembly line rolling, right?
Right.
And they're using different methods to make larger components, pre-assembled modules, and things are coming together faster and less expensive, and of course, with less labor involved. So you're going to see them revolutionize the assembly line, and some of the legacy automakers are going to have an awful time adapting to it because they're so entrenched and so massive and so giant, you know?
I'm sure the unions are not going to be entirely jazzed with that if it'll take less people to do the job.
Yes, that's the other factor, because as we know, Tesla is not in favor of unionization.
Well, you know, but isn't it tough on your end, too? If it's modular, what's a repair person to do?
Well, so these are body modules. These are major components in putting these cars together, which we're not going to really deal with too much out in the industry, in the repair industry, except maybe in body repair where you've got a corner of the car crushed, and maybe now it's easier to put another corner on if that's something that will be happening in the future. But but everything is a module and everything is components now. You don't repair specific components like you used to. You don't repair an alternator or repair a starter. You simply replace the unit. That's just the way it goes now.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's car maintenance and repair, or truck if you happen to drive a truck. That'll work as well. Several emails. We'll get to the phones in a bit at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or, again, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And, Gordon, ton of email here, so we'll grab one or two before the first break. This is from Bob in Stafford. I have a 1969 Chevy C20 truck with a small block Chevy and Saginaw 4-speed. Brand new Tremec TKX 5-speed will be installed soon. The current driveline is supported by engine mounts in the usual positions on either sides of the engine block and additional mounts on either side of the bell housing. There's no factory-installed mount at the tail end of the transmission, as is usually the case. As the new transmission weighs 99 pounds, I'm concerned it will not be adequately supported by the existing engine mounts. My thought is to install a transmission crossmember with a mount for the rear of the transmission. This will support the transmission in three locations, which I believe will add stress to the transmission and bell housing connection. Should the mounts that currently support the bell housing be removed when the crossmember is installed? I just read four paragraphs. I do not understand a word. Gordon, help me out.
Yeah, so that's an interesting project that he has going, because I'm in a similar project, but not with a C20 truck, with a 67 Chevelle that I'm putting a TKX 5-speed in.
Okay.
So I know the transmission he's talking about, and I'm familiar with the methods of changing it. They do have a cross member tail mounting facility on that transmission. I would contact the source where he got the transmission, whether it's American Driveline or Silver. Can't remember the Silver something or other, but there's a handful of really big suppliers that put these kits together.
Yeah,
I would get their take on it. And some vehicles require a custom crossmember that they build for that vehicle that you install. So I think they definitely want the tail of that transmission supported, And I would just reach out to the supplier. They'll have all the information he needs.
All right, one more email, and then we'll hit the break and then the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. This is from Dennis. My 2012 Prius hybrid started showing warning lights for the traction control and two others. The cruise kept shutting itself off. My new mechanic said the front hub assembly is the most likely culprit because when the sensors don't work correctly, it kills the cruise and makes other traction lights come on. He showed me the part, made enough sense to spend over $400 to install a new hub. No warning lights for 2 weeks, then intermittently misbehaving. It can go 2 or 3 weeks now, no issue. Then the same things happen. Doesn't affect the car's performance, but it does kill the cruise while in use. Is it the weather, the cold, or is another hub acting up?
Very good question, Ray, because we've had two Priuses in 2 weeks with the identical story. And one of them, the warning lights had gone out, but we scanned the anti-lock braking module for history codes, and it had codes. In this car's case, it was left rear. Spoke to the owner, explained it, indicated that the problem currently was dormant, but there was a history code in there. They decided to have us replace it. And once we took this left rear hub assembly out of there, I could see what was happening. A lot of rust gets behind it where the sensor connector comes out, and moisture is getting in there and wiping it out. And it's just a pure matter of time. It's going to fail, you know, forever. Fronts can do the same thing. So my suggestion there is get it back in and get it scanned, and let's see which wheel is the culprit. If it's a different one, unfortunately, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
If it's the same exact one, could have a defective part. It could have a marginal part that's failing, and that should be taken care of under some type of warranty, I would guess.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We've only hit second gear here. It'll be a long way before we hit overdrive. We'll be back. Marquees here on Vox Pop. It's car maintenance and repair with our buddy Gordon Fricke. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to the phones. Ted in Walker Valley. Ted, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Pretty good. How are you?
All right. My question is I am doing some work on my old 1990 Jeep Comanche pickup truck. And I am about to take the oil pan out, which was redone once with Permatex in the gasket, and I have a gasket set for it, but the gasket set is 4 pieces, and I would like to know if there is a standardized way to layer the gaskets as you go in. You put in the front and rear gasket first, or you put in the side gaskets first?
Yeah, so the original gasket, was that RTV silicone and no gaskets at all? It was just out of a tube? Is that what you're seeing there?
That's it. It's not the original one, but that's what's in there.
Okay, yeah. Jeep...
I have an OEM gasket set.
Yeah, okay. So the four-piecers, the best way to do those is to glue them in place with a like a spray adhesive, like a contact adhesive that you spray both surfaces, and then you stick them on. Then they never move. They're not going to move when you put that thing together. So if it's easier, glue them to the oil pan, and then you could, as a matter of insurance, you could skim that also with that same RTV, and you're definitely going to want to RTV all the gaps where the pieces of the seal come together when you put that up in there.
Ted.
Yes, and back by the main seals of where we have the tight square corner. But my question is there a layering that's standard, like so that when I overlay my, say, back by my main seal and my timing cover, does that go on which side of the cork gaskets on the side?
They should be slotted or carved out. I don't think they lay over each other. Don't they kind of mate up?
I don't know because I haven't.
Yeah,
laid
I don't.
Them down.
I don't think they're going to overlap each other. I think they're going to kind of click together or notch together. And the gasket sets a lot of times came with a little tube of silicone, so you could seal up every one of those joints where that gasket comes together. You know, I wouldn't go overboard with it, but I'd use a decent amount. It'll kind of squish out of the way. But I don't think there's any. I don't know if you put the ends up in there first. I think maybe you do, and then you put the long pieces in afterwards. But again, gluing them in with that adhesive is going to be the trick, so they don't move around and get out of position when you're putting that pan up and getting it tight.
All right, Ted, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's cars and truck repair and maintenance with Gordon Fricke. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Brian in Amherst. Brian, you're on.
Hey, Greens.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing? I'm right here, yes. I've had a 2011 Corolla and wouldn't start this morning. The battery would turn it over. In fact, I would take my hand off the ignition and it'd still be kicking the motor over, but it wouldn't start.
Did you catch any of that, Gordon? We're having kind of a tough connection with you, Brian. You sound like you're on the dark side of the moon, but I think we got it. Gordon, what do you think?
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with it for keeping cranking, even though you release the key. That's a start. Okay. That's a crank command that the computer got from you at the ignition. So the starter motor and all that's working. The engine didn't take off. So the reasons for that are generally fuel or spark and whatever runs those two systems. Going beyond that in your backyard is very difficult to do on today's cars. But, you know, you got the cranking going, but the engine didn't take off. So how many miles are on the car?
It's like 60,000.
Yeah, so that's low mileage for a Corolla.
Yeah.
What kind of maintenance-wise, are you totally up to date? Or, you know, I'm not saying you need spark plugs, but if they get overlooked, and it might be a little early for them, sometimes they'll sneak up on you, and it'll flood, and then it won't start. And people say, gee, how could I just all of a sudden have wiped out these spark plugs, you know? But I guess the thing is, it's got to be determined what's lacking now. It could be, and the way we find out in the case like this is we plug it into our scan equipment, and hopefully we'll get codes that'll lead us into a direction where something didn't work the way it should, and that leads you to some testing. So for a Corolla, which is probably one of the most reliable cars in the world, I wouldn't say, hey, this always fails on them, because not a lot goes wrong with them.
Okay, so it's not just a matter of a weak battery. There's something else diagnostic.
Yeah, it sounds like you're cranking okay, because, you know, it kept going, even though you decided to let up on the key, it finished its crank cycle. So something else is preventing it from firing.
All right, Brian, thanks so much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Cars with Gordon Fricke today. And let's see, Mike is in Clifton Park. Hello, Mike.
Hi there. Gordon, I've got a 19 Subaru Outback. And about 2 years after I got it, it started not starting after you lift it for a while. In other words, the battery is discharging by itself. And about it's been an occasional problem. If we keep driving it, it's fine. But if I leave it sit for 3 days, if we don't drive for three, maybe 4 days, the battery goes dead. Now, they had a recall, and all that said was, we're going to check your charging system and check your battery, and if your battery is no good, we'll give you a new battery or reimburse you for if you may have bought one.
Right.
But I did that. They checked the battery. They checked it's charging. You know, anybody could tell that just by the voltage. But
right.
It's got a discharge. It's discharging by itself, and I can tell you how much it is. It's 135 milliamps, which
yeah,
I don't know if that's
high.
Correct or not, but
yeah. It's hard to get that accurate reading if you just go in there and put your amp meter across the battery terminals. You have to let all the capacitors and modules fully charge. Then you disconnect it with your meter connected in series. But it used to be 25 to 50 milliamps was acceptable, and now cars have so many parasitic draws that 75 is pretty normal. But you said over 100?
135. And that's the way I checked that is I made a loop so I could disconnect the battery terminal and just leave the meter in series.
Meter in there? Yeah, perfect. You did
meter
the right thing.
Meter in series.
So, yep.
And no matter how long it sits, it could be 8 hours, 10 hours, tomorrow. It's 135 milliamps, and that's by anybody's even Johnson Controls, who made the battery. Their limit is 100 milliamps.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
said 100 milliamps.
Yeah, that's enough. If you did the math, you can tell how quick it's going to discharge that battery. The problem in finding that draw is extremely difficult in today's world because of the multitude of modules that are connected to the vehicle now. You know, there was a time, and you can still do this. You can have your amp meter connected in the way you have it, and then you can pull one fuse at a time out of your fuse boxes, and when that draw goes away, you've discovered the culprit. You've discovered the circuit involved.
Right.
Then you would study that fuse and see how many things it runs. And sometimes they run a bunch of things, and sometimes they're dedicated to only a few. I've seen some crazy stuff in power outlets, which used to be cigarette lighters, you know, that thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah. Right.
Gum foil wrappers in there, creating a tiny draw, you know, anything that has some conductivity goes in there could be an issue. The other thing that can happen is you can have wires that have marginally chafed somewhere, and they're just enough to let that tiny, tiny current flow through there. Finding them could be really difficult. But if you want to get on the hunt yourself, do the fuse thing, and you probably will find out where the circuit is, and then you could go online, get a wiring diagram, and follow it. Just see what else is on there. You know, it might be interesting to see what lives on that circuit.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now we go down, if the screen is correct, to lovely Hawpaw, Long Island. Paul, are you there?
Yep, I am, Ray.
Hey, is the Comac Motor Inn still open down there?
That's how I knew you were from. You mentioned that once, once on the air,
yeah.
And I knew he's got to be from the island.
How you doing, man?
Pretty good. Not bad, actually. I just finished open heart surgery, so.
Oh, good.
I'm pretty happy and healing.
Excellent. What's your question?
I have a 2016 Colorado. It's weird. It's got some thumping coming from the front end, and I thought that there might be a flat spot or something on a tire or a bubble. So I needed tires, changed them out, and it's still there. Same thumping, which accelerates with speed. Now, the guy that sold me the tires said, oh, yeah, there's a lot of stuff online about the front ends on these things, the front-wheel drives. He said that is the cause of that. I just wondered if there was anything that that I might consider that hasn't been yet with regards to this thumping.
Sure. How many miles are on the car, truck?
Gordon, I'm going to say it's about 70,000.
Yeah. Okay. Not a tremendous amount of miles. They're pretty durable vehicles. Does that sound change when you're bearing through curves, like an off-ramp or a gradual turn on a good road?
Sometimes it sounds as if, yeah, because I've paid attention to that. And there's one off-ramp on the Throgs Neck Bridge that I hear it on often. And that's a curve to the left.
Yep. And does that bring that noise about, or does it calm it down?
Makes it a little bit louder.
Yeah. So here's what it could be. It could be a wheel bearing issue. And the wheel bearings on that Colorado are unitized. They're modular bearings. They're not disassemblable or greasable or serviceable. They're put together from the factory, and that's it. And a lot of times the noises they make are more of a roaring sound, like a propeller airplane or snow tires with studs on them that are there all the time. But a rhythmic sound that changes in curves because you're bearing different loads on that bearing could be a wheel bearing sound happening. And being an all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive vehicle, it could go in a shop and get raised, and a mechanic could drive the wheels on a lift, and another guy could listen to it with a scope, and it may turn up that noise or it may not, because now they're totally unloaded because they're just hanging in midair. But right. I think I would just bear with it a little longer, because it will change and maybe get worse, and you might be looking at a wheel bearing.
Okay, that's something that I hadn't even considered, so I'm appreciative.
Sure.
Paul,
good
thanks,
luck with it.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. One more call, then we'll take a break, and then they hit the email bag, and then go back to the phones. It looks like it's Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Mine's not a car or a truck. It's a tractor. I have a Kubota tractor. When I turn the key, it'll crank. It's supposed to, when you turn it to the accessory, release the shutoff solenoid. So when I turn the key, it won't release the shutoff solenoid. It'll crank and crank and crank. When I hook a battery booster to it, like a whatever, any kind of plug-in battery charger, put it on 40 amps, turn the key, I can hear the solenoid pop back, and it'll start no problem. But if I hook like a battery like booster to it, ones that you charge, it won't
right.
It won't start, it won't give it enough to release the solenoid. So I don't know why it won't release the solenoid. But if I hook the jumper to it, it'll release the solenoid.
How current or good is the battery in the tractor now? Is it old? Is it a pretty fresh battery?
Brand new. I just bought a new one thinking that was the problem. It wasn't.
Yep. Well, so what you could be doing is when you boost it, you're jumping the voltage up quite a bit with that booster when it goes on. How many amp boost is it? Does it say on your thing there?
I can
when you
set
boost
it to 10. I can set it to like 240, 20. I usually put it on 40 and it boosts it no problem.
It's starting and it stays running?
And it stays running. If I shut it off any time, it won't do it unless I give it that extra boost.
Yeah. So how old is this Kubota? So this has a solenoid on the fuel pump that allows the engine to start, and it shuts it off, correct?
Correct. When you give it that little juice, it pulls the solenoid back, and then when you turn the key off, it
My thought is that solenoid is getting weak, and you're helping it with that extra voltage. Because when you put that on boost, you're not only providing it with more cranking amps, but you're raising the voltage up considerably. And I think it's helping that could be a failing solenoid, and you're just boosting it and helping it with that extra shot of power.
Okay, you could, I could look up an old solenoid, but it...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I had an old solenoid that I bought one once, and they wouldn't take it back, so I tried switching them out, and it did the same thing. So I guess both of them could be weak. Maybe I just need a new one.
Well, it's possible. You could maybe look up some specs, and if you have a multimeter, check the resistance of it. You know, I hate to say go out and buy a new one and nothing changes. Maybe there's a connection issue that booster is overcoming also. You know, a corroded wire, a bad connection. You know, you should check everything, which you may have already done, from the battery to the engine to the starter. Make sure all your connections are perfect, you know. And maybe you can get some test specs on those solenoids and just see if they're low. Maybe they're getting weak.
All right, Mark, we got to take a break here. We are overdue. Thank you for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll blast through a few of the emails coming up. Sonny Rollins from A Night at the Village Vanguard. Sunny Moon for Two on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is with us. And Gordon, let's dispatch some emails here. This is from Andrew. My 03 Mustang is at 239,000 miles. I'm 37. This is only my second car. I bought it brand new off the lot. I just replaced the brakes last week, and the alternator is beginning to go. I have to keep the car on the road because the car market is a dumpster fire still. What are other things that I should be aware of? And that is from Andrew.
Well, I mean, there's no set series of events that could be happening. My advice to anybody, and he's got a lot of miles on this car, so he must be very good with the maintenance schedule, or I don't think you'd be getting such good usage out of it.
Yeah.
Don't give up on the maintenance. A lot of people say, this car is getting so old, I'm not going to do this maintenance or that maintenance. Or you know, as far as what's going to wear out next, very hard to predict. There's always things coming up and failing, but... You know, the alternator, is that what he just replaced, Ray? He says it's going.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's amazing if it's the original. I mean, that's a great, great lifespan. Might be a good idea to get it into a trustworthy shop and say, hey, I don't intend to get a new car for a while or another car. Can you just give this thing a workover and just give me an idea what it's looking like?
Yeah.
Is there play in the water pump? Are some of the bearings on the pulleys on the front of the engine getting loose, the belt tensioner? You know, there's a lot of stuff that could get some professional eyes on it and get some advice on, hey, you should start replacing this, that, and the other thing because it's going to fail soon, you know?
Yeah, but if the car is 19 years old and you go and you do that, you could end up spending as much as you're going to pay for a new car.
Well, you got to be careful. That's why I say you want to take it to a trustworthy source. It's not going to, you know, say, hey, I'm going to throw the book at it because it's so old, you know?
Right. Now, this is from Ed in Wilbraham. Please give us some tips on how to increase longevity on hybrid car batteries.
Well, I don't know if there really is any, Ray, but their life expectancy greatly surpassed what they originally thought. They were hoping in the early years of a 10-year lifespan, and most of them well exceed that.
Yeah.
But there isn't anything you can do with them to increase their lifespan other than regular usage. Batteries, like anything else, go through cycles, and I think just maintain the car and keep driving it.
All right, this is from Scott. I have a 2012 Honda Accord with an odd problem. While driving, the radio turns off periodically after emitting a loud audio pop. If I stop and turn the car off and restart, the radio comes back on just fine. This has happened a dozen times in the past 6 months or so. What could possibly be the cause, and how serious is it?
Yeah, Well, we know it's probably internal to the unit. Do a very, very high-tech experiment.
What's that?
When the radio pops out, give it a bang. I don't mean smash it out of the dashboard, but give it a good, I don't know how to describe it, but kind of hit it, but don't ruin it. And just, if when you hit that a couple times, it immediately comes back to life. Yeah. It's definitely an internal issue that's only going to be solved by replacing the unit.
You know, I can't tell you how many things I've destroyed by doing just that.
Well, that's why I was very careful as to how much force you exert on that unit when it's not working, right?
Yeah. It's a fine line, by the way.
It is.
All right, this is from Larry, and then we'll get back to the phones. I have a 2022 Toyota Corolla SE. How long should... A lot of battery questions. How long should the battery keep a charge when the car is not being driven? I parked my car for 7 days, had to call a tow to start the car. I did not leave the lights on. And that's from Larry.
Yeah. That is a much more common concern than it ever was, as we talked about earlier with the caller that had that 130 milliamp draw. Cars have way more current needs and draws now with the key off. And there was a statement issued by one of the major car companies, I don't know, a few years ago, that said it is perfectly normal if you do not start this car for, and I forget how many days it was. It wasn't 30. It was less than that. That you may find that you need to be jump started or boosted because of the normal draws on the system.
Wow.
So if you're not using a car for that much of a period of time, you should install a battery tender so you can just plug it in and it maintains the battery. So 38 days later, it starts up just like it was brand new.
But I think he said 7 days. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, seven's a little bit too short for sure. And he may have too much of a current draw there.
Yeah. You know what I got?
Or a marginal battery, even though the car's pretty new.
I went to, I won't say what store, but I got a fairly inexpensive charger/quick starter that I just leave in my garage now. It's the greatest thing, and it wasn't even that much. It'll also trickle charge the batteries and tend them as you say, but it's just such a handy thing to have.
It sure is. Yeah, a lot of people should have those. Great thing to get you out of a bind,
provided you're in your driveway. All right, let's go.
Yeah, or keep it in your trunk.
Well, that's true, but well, yeah, you make a point. All right, let's not debate that. Let's go back to Pittsfield already. And Laura, you're on. Hello?
Yes, hi.
You're in your driveway.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
Oh, hey, Laura, my friend, could you turn the radio down? I sound terrific, but I don't need to hear myself.
Yes, I can. Sorry
okay.
about that.
That's all right.
Okay, is that better?
Sure.
Okay, now you can. Okay.
All right. Something's going to happen now, right?
Turn the radio down.
Oh, I thought I...
This is getting to be a little weird, Laura.
Okay, now is it good?
We're good to go.
Okay. Okay, hi, everyone. So I bought a 2017 Touring Honda CR-V, and I was told, get a CR-V, because nothing's ever going to go wrong. So I get it just about 8 months ago, and intermittently, and it could be, you know, like every 2 weeks or one or every 3 weeks or whatever, as I'm the car's cold, so either I'm, you know, in a store or I'm or overnight. And I pull out of the driveway with my foot on the brake, and there's this squeaking, groaning noise. And sometimes it was loud. And when after I pulled out, backing up, and started again, I didn't hear it. And it was very, very intermittent. Now it's getting louder and happens sometimes when I just press on the brake. But it usually happens when I am... when I've just started out or, you know, backing up from a parking lot where I've been in a store for a couple hours. So I don't know. At first, I thought it was the CV joints because it made like a cracking noise when I turned, but my foot was on the brake. So it's coming from that area somehow.
Yeah. So it's a 17 CRV, you said, correct?
Right, right.
And how many miles are on the vehicle, roughly?
77.
Okay. What we see a tremendous amount of is rust and corrosion getting into the brakes and causing the pads to start to stick in their mountings. So you'll get dragging brakes. And sometimes they make more noise going backwards because that's not the normal direction that you're using the brakes in. And it's pretty easy to have checked, but you need to go to a repair shop. And if you can reproduce that sound and the mechanic hears it or the service advisor hears it, that's half the battle. But it could very well be you've got some sticking brakes going on there. And if they raise the vehicle up on a lift, the technician will step on the brake pedal and then release it and then spin each wheel. And a lot of times we find them dragging very, very considerably. And that usually gives you a lot of noise. So that may be what's happening there. Because they're right. CRVs are very, very good vehicles.
Right. I mean, I wish it was that simple. They said that they took, took it to the Honda dealer like 4 or 5 times. And they never could, replicate the sound. But they said that they took all the brakes totally apart and checked everything, and there was nothing wrong with the brakes or the brake pads or anything. If they did, I don't know if they did that or not, but they told me they did.
Yeah, they probably did because it's very, very common. You could also have some corrosion going on where the parking brakes are or the brake shields are, but, I could speculate it a lot of stuff without hearing it. That's what we see the most of, but looks like your dealer kind of jumped onto that and confirmed that it wasn't. So unfortunately, I think you're just going to have to bear with it a bit longer, and maybe it will do it consistently. Mm-hmm. Once it's doing it consistently, you can find the problem then.
All right, Laura, thank you very much. We'll go now to New Paltz. And Ann, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a question. My daughter has a CRV. Not a CRV, sorry, that's the last call. She has a Crosstrek.
Okay.
And it has about 40,000 miles on it, and she had to put new wheel bearings in the back two tires. How many miles is normal for bearings to go out?
Yeah, that's becoming a very, very common and disliked repair because they're quite expensive, and
What's expensive? What's the cost?
Oh, it's not ballpark. Gordon.
It depends on the vehicle and where you're getting the parts and your labor rate and all that stuff. But you could be spending $300-$400 a wheel, sometimes more. And it's common for these bearings to fail, and we see a lot of it on Subarus. We do a lot of Subarus, and we do Crosstreks. I don't know if they have maybe a little bit weak of a design, but to put wheeled bearings in the rear of a Crosstrek is not an uncommon event.
Wow, because I had an Outback and had 100,000 miles on it and no problems like that.
Once the Outbacks got a little bit more into the mileage, they started suffering as well, but the Crosstreks they do it sooner. Might be a weaker design, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
But it's not uncommon.
So you've seen it kind of regularly. Okay.
Yeah,
that's
of vehicles.
That's what I wanted to know.
All right,
yep.
Ann, thank you very much. Gordon Fricke, we got a few minutes left here. Let's grab another call. We'll go to Joe in Bridgeport, Vermont. Joe, you're on.
Hi. I have a remark regarding Vaseline on connections.
I'll be darned.
Gordon had previously said, or he'd warned people not to put Vaseline between battery posts and clamps. And I learned years ago that from an electrical engineer that Vaseline is an excellent conductor. And I found that pulling out a corroded light bulb and just kind of cursorily cleaning it and putting Vaseline on it, they make connection.
Yeah. So no, that is correct what you're saying. When you do light sockets, some factory yep. sockets, especially with Swedish cars, were globbed with some type of a grease. I don't know if it was a lithium grease, but the battery terminal is a little bit different because you're looking for the best possible connection, metal to metal, to get that high voltage or that high amperage connection through there. So for years, it was advised to only grease the outsides of them, not the actual part that slips over it. I don't know how conductive Vaseline is, but if you're having good luck with it and it's working, I'm sure that's okay.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Now, we only have about 90 seconds or so here with Gordon Fricke. This email from Scott at Pompanoag Farm, all right, I don't know where that is. Does the neutral safety switch go bad all in one moment, or does it degrade over time? Could it cause an engine light to show up before it finally dies? This is a 2009 Chevy Express. That's from Scott.
Well, it can, because the transmission position is now important to the computer. So if the switch is beginning to fail, you can get a code that says mode selector is having problems, and that neutral safety switch is in that, telling the computer what gear you've selected. So the question is, they can fail all at once, or they can start to fail slowly and degrade. So yeah, that's true.
All right, this email, and then we'll probably have to wrap it here. This is from Alvin. I'm with Ray. Really don't like ABS. Got an 06 Escape all-wheel drive. The ABS warning light will come on sometimes, and then the next time I start the car, it's not on. Been happening for a couple of years. Is it dangerous, or can I ignore it?
Well, it's not dangerous because you will not lose your standard hydraulic braking system. You just will lose the anti-lock feature of it. And currently in New York State, you will still pass your state inspection, even if your ABS light is on.
Well, I'm sure they'll change that to make things more expensive. Hey, Gordon, man, thanks for being here. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Support comes from Vision XL, Lake Katrine, continuing to... No, start again. English as a second language. Vision XL, Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310. Salem Farm Supply, carrying a stock of Kubota machinery and Kubota genuine parts with equipment for everyone from farmers to homeowners. Locations in Salem and Claverick, New York, salemfarmsupply.com. And Capital Roots, working to provide healthy food access with dignity for all Capital Region residents while supporting area farms and businesses. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. He is a tremendous guest, and we love having him on the show. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who is a tremendous engineer, and we love having him do the show. Jess O'Rourke, who was also a tremendous engineer, screened the calls today. Somewhat grudgingly, but she did it, and I appreciate it very much. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets und Vets. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.